chapter 35 entitled The Gopi Singh of Krishna. It's text number 16 and 17. Nijapadabja talair dhvaja vajra. Nijapadabjadalerdvajavajra Nirajankusha Vichitra Lalamai Nirajankusha Vichitra Lalamai Vrajabhavo Shamayan Kuratodam Vrajabhuvo samayan kuratodam Varsma dhurya gatir idita venu Varsma dhurya gatir idita venu Nijapadabja dalair dvaja vajra Nirajankusha Vichitra Lalamai Vrajabhuva Shamayan Kuratodam Varshma Dhurya Gati Iditta Venu Nija, his own. Padabja, of the lotus feet. Dalai, like flower petals. Dhvaja, of a flag. Vajra, thunderbolt. Niraja, lotus. Ankusha, an elephant god. Vichitra, variegated. Lalamai, by the markings. Vraja, of Vraja. Bhuva, of the ground. Shamayan, relieving. Khura, from the hooves of the cows. Todam, the pain. Varshma, with his body. Dhurya, like an elephant's. Gatihi, whose movement. Idita, extolled. Venuhu, whose flute. Vrajati, he walks tena by that vayam vi sa vilasa playful vikshana with his glances arpita bestowed mana bhava of lust vegaha whose agitation kuja like that of trees gatim whose movement complete lack of movement gamatya gamitah attaining na vidama we do not recognize kasmalena because of our bewilderment kavaram the braids of our hair vasanam our dress va or translation as Krishna strolls through Vraja with his lotus petal like feet marking the ground with the distinctive emblems of flag thunderbolt lotus and the elephant god he relieves the distress the ground feels from the cow's hooves as he plays his renowned flute his body moves with grace of an elephant thus we gopis who become agitated by Cupid when Krishna playfully glances at us stand as still as trees unaware that our hair and garments are slackening purport by the disciples of his divine grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada here mother Yashoda is no longer in the company of the gopis who are confidentially describing their conjugal attraction to Sri Krishna it is clear from the comments of Jiva Goswami and other acharyas that the statements in this chapter were made at various times and places this is natural since the gopis were always absorbed in the thoughts of Sri Krishna day and night Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsya Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitam Sha E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Krishna Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna So I've been asked to speak today This is not even the last minute, this is the last second. So, kindly bear with me. Whatever comes out is absolutely Krishna's mercy. So here we are in a section where the gopis are discussing about Krishna in his absence. And they are in a state of ecstasy. So here, those devotees who are supposed to be the most exalted devotees in the entire universe, what do they do when they are together is described. Generally, a person, his character and his consciousness is understood when He is in his private moments. Publicly behaving in a certain way is very easy. Privately, how you behave is very difficult. So these narrations over here are not how the gopis behave in a public place. These are how gopis behave in a private place. Generally, even as devotees, when we know that we are going to give a class, when we know that we are going to be in front of so many people, it's very easy to behave in a very sophisticated way. But in the privacy of our own houses, the privacy of our own ashrams, how we behave actually shows what our consciousness is. Here the gopis of Vrindavan, constantly they are absorbed in Krishna, so naturally the only discussions that happen is about Krishna. Here, Jiva Goswami and other acharyas, they are mentioning that these verses that have been placed in this chapter are all verses that have happened at different times, you know. And at different instances, the gopis discussing about Krishna are brought together. Because all the time what they do when they are together privately is they discuss Krishna. And every time if you notice each of these verses that we are going to see, they are discussing different elements of Krishna. So Krishna consciousness has a lot to offer us, and each element of Krishna has something special to teach us. So here, one of the things that the gopis are discussing is about the lotus feet of the Lord. What are the beautiful markings on the lotus feet of the Lord? Here they mention the lotus feet are markings of distinctive emblems. Emblem of the flag, thunderbolt, lotus, elephant, goat, etc. So, each of these symbols that are there on the lotus feet are not there just like that. It's not that, you know, one day Krishna decided I'll have symbols on my feet and each of these symbols are, you know, without any reason. Design of this world, if you see all the saris, the embroidery of the saris, if you see, you know, the different elements of design that are involved in architecture, most of the designs don't have any reason, don't have any understanding, don't make any sense actually. But each of the designs that are there on the lotus feet of the Lord have a certain reason why it is there and have a reason what that symbol connects in our lives. So I'm just trying to present the 19 symbols that are there in the lotus feet of the Lord from the perspective of how they relate to us in our own lives. So each of these symbols are placed at the lotus feet of the Lord to give us hope actually. So the first symbol is the symbol of the moon. It's not a full moon, it's a half moon. So Lord Shiva on his head, he carries the crescent moon, you know. So the same symbol of the crescent moon is also at the lotus feet of the Lord. And Lord Shiva, when he carries the crescent moon on his head, what is he thinking? Why is the crescent moon on his head? The crescent moon is on the head of Lord Shiva because he wants to remember this crescent moon which is on the lotus feet of the Lord. And the moon, it represents coolness. It represents, you know, coolness from the burning miseries of this world. So the crescent moon of the lotus feet of the Lord indicates to us that those who bear the lotus feet on their heads, they experience the coolness of moonlight. And the moon also represents destruction of darkness. So in a dark night, the one thing that really destroys darkness is the moonshine. But why is the moon on the lotus feet of the Lord not a full moon but a crescent moon? The reason is because it is explained that the lotus feet of the Lord has 10 full moons already. The toenails of the Lord, each of the toenails represents a full moon. So the moon is thinking, the moon which is at the bottom of the lotus feet of the Lord is thinking, there are already 10 big moons on the lotus feet of the Lord. What will I do by being big? So out of shame, he becomes a crescent moon. He becomes a partial moon. So, when we remember the moon at the lotus feet of the Lord, we remember that when the lotus feet of the Lord is placed on our heads, just like Lord Shiva is carrying the lotus feet of the Lord on his head represented by the crescent moon, we remember, first of all, it creates coolness in our life. And second thing is that such a person becomes exalted and of supreme character like Lord Shiva. The second symbol that is there on the lotus feet of the Lord is a water pot. The water pot indicates that here is the source of water which quenches our thirst. So all of us in our lives have hankerings. This is called as Trishna. So because the hankerings are so strong, we need something to quench the thirst of hankering that we have. So in this world, people try different means to quench this thirst. People go on holidays thinking that, you know, whole regular routine is so boring, so heavy, so tough, burning. So if I go out on a holiday, I'll experience some satisfaction. I'll experience some quenching of my thirst. Then I'll come back. Unfortunately, in this world, wherever you go, you will never experience quenching of thirst at all. Like Kadam Kanan Maharaj gives this story of his own life. Before he came in touch with Krishna consciousness, he was talking about how he had gone on a holiday once, saving a lot of money, thinking that, you know, the holiday is going to give him an experience of his life. And he had chosen to go to Hawaii, one of the best holiday spots. So he went all excited to the holidays, a beginning. So he went to the beach naturally. Hot sun. And as soon as he entered the beach, the sand was burning. So he started running, thinking that he will enter the water and he will swim. And as soon as he was trying to enter the water, he saw a big board over there which said, no swimming allowed here, dangerous waters. So he couldn't enter the water, he couldn't stand on the sand. So he's thinking, where will I go? So he saw a tree, a coconut tree. He said, I'll go and sit under the tree at least. Some shade is there around. So he went and sat under this tree. Suddenly he saw all around him scorpions were there. So he couldn't sit there also. So he was thinking, I paid so much to come to enjoy a holiday, but what's happening here? I can't enter the waters, I can't stand on the sand, I can't stand in the shade. What is the use? So in this world, hankering that we have is unquenchable practically. Like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, some chapters back, when Krishna was going towards this, the Yamuna river, and the cows and his friends were also walking along. So Krishna was walking and the friends and the cows were walking behind him. Suddenly, the cows and the friends, they saw the Yamuna river ahead. So, the river looks very exciting, very fresh, you know, it looks very attractive. So, the cows and the boys, they ran ahead of Krishna. But when they reached over there, they realized, when they drank the water, they realized it's a poisoned water. They all fell unconscious, they practically lost their lives. So, in this world also, all of us, we are walking along with Krishna, we're trying to follow the process of Krishna consciousness. But we always feel that somewhere ahead of Krishna, lies a source of pleasure. So if we try to leave Krishna and run ahead for that pleasure, what is there actually is poisoned water. So the water pot indicates that here is a source of water that is not poisoned, but rather that will actually quench your thirst. It will not leave you hankering for more. Salt water, if you drink, it leaves you hankering for more water. You don't feel your thirst quenched. So similarly, the satisfactions of this world are like drinking salt water. How much ever you drink, you feel more thirsty at the end. So the next thing that is there on the lotus feet of the Lord is a triangle. Trikona. The trikona indicates that in a devotee's life, there are three most important things which are the three most important points in a devotee's life. Nothing else matters. Bhakta, Bhagavan and Bhakti. These three are the most important things in a devotee's life. Other than these three things, nothing else matters. As long as our life revolves around these three things. The reason there is a triangle has three corners. Without the three corners, the triangle doesn't make any sense only. It's not a triangle at all, right? So, as long as these three things exist in a devotee's life, that devotee's life has some shape. And the moment these three things don't exist, or one of the two things exist, or one of the two things cease to exist, the shape of a triangle doesn't last. Another thing that is there in a devotee's life is at the lotus feet of the Lord, one of the symbols is a bow. So the bow indicates two things. One is that the bow indicates protection, but more than protection of physical self, the bow indicates mental protection. So the Lord, He protects us from the bow of Cupid. So Cupid has bows through which he is shooting arrows. So Krishna's eyes are compared to a bow. When you look at the center of Krishna's eyes, it is explained that the effect of looking at the center of Krishna's eyes is that you get saved from the attraction of lust. And the concept of bow, the concept of Kama, Kamadev, in the Puranas, there is a story of how Lord Shiva, he had burned down Kamadev by looking at him. And interestingly, when Lord Shiva burnt Kamadev, not even ashes were found. Generally, when you burn a person, at least ashes fall down, right? But in case of when Lord Shiva burnt Kamadev, not even ashes were found. From that day onwards, Kamadev got another name. Anga means body. So Kamadev came to be known as Ananga. Ananga means somebody who has no body at all. What does that mean in our lives? It means that lust doesn't have a physical presence. It has only a mental presence. So Kama doesn't exist on a physical platform. It only exists on a mental platform. Which means that pleasure in this world is really not there. How much ever you enjoy in this world, it's not a physical pleasure. It's only a mental pleasure. So, if you really want to experience joy in this world, that joy is not from Kama only. But when Kama is connected with Dharma, that really gives satisfaction and joy. So, the bow below the lotus feet of the Lord indicates that one should take shelter of this bow, the bow of Krishna's eyes, where you really get satisfaction and you get protection from the proposals of Kamadev, which are on a mental platform. Then there is ether. It's very interesting that ether is there on the lotus feet of the Lord as a mark, as a symbol. Now, how can you represent ether as a mark? In the lotus feet of the Lord, there is like a circle within which there is another circle. Which means that whatever is contained in that place is called as ether, kham. So ether is one of the properties of Krishna. He owns it. So one remembers when, as soon as you see ether at the lotus feet of the Lord, what does it teach us? It teaches us that ether is a property of Krishna. We should respect it. How can we respect ether? By not polluting it. How can you pollute ether? By speaking nonsense. Words that come out from your mouth are eternally there, occupying some space of Krishna's ether. So when you speak words, those words, it's not that the words have come out and they have gone. They remain forever. You cannot see them, you cannot hear them probably. But they occupy a certain portion of Krishna's ether. Therefore, as devotees, one has to be very careful of what words come out of our mouth. Because we are going to pollute a certain portion of Krishna's ether by our words, if they are wrong. And if they are right, we are going to purify a certain portion of the ether element. Therefore, when we see ether, one remembers that words that come out from our mouth have to be for the purpose of glorification of the Lord. Then there is the cow's hoof print on the lotus feet of the Lord. The cow's hoof print indicate that when somebody takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, then the entire world, which is like a material ocean, shrinks to the size of the cow's hoof print and you can easily cross it. Here in this particular verse, the gopis are mentioning that the earth which is strolled on by Lord Krishna, by, you know, the lotus footprints are there, it creates weight on the earth. But it's very interesting, the gopis are saying that the ground experiences weight of the cow's hoofprints, cow's feet. By that, the earth is burdened. And by the weight of Krishna's feet, the earth feels relieved of its burdens. Now how can, you know, one weight increase the burden and another weight decrease the burden? It doesn't make any sense. But actually the fact is that when Krishna walks, the earth doesn't feel burdened by Krishna's walk. Why? Because the personality of Godhead, Krishna has come to the earth to relieve it of its sinful burden. When Krishna was a small child, we saw this pastime where Krishna ate the mud. Mrida Bhakshan Leela. So there is a purport that the acharyas give of Mrida Bhakshan Leela. From an interesting perspective. The acharyas say that why did Krishna eat mud? The reason Krishna ate mud was because when he was a 1 or 2 year old child, he thought that I have come to this world to relieve the world of its burden. To relieve the earth of its burden. What am I doing now? I am doing nothing to relieve the earth of its burden. So let me eat some mud. Like that I will decrease some burden of the earth. So he ate mud. Acharya explained. So the mood of the Lord is that he is trying to relieve the earth of its burden. Therefore, when Krishna walks on the earth doesn't feel burdened. Rather it feels light. What is the burden of the earth? What is the burden that the earth is carrying? In the pastime of Krishna entering Mathura, there is this personality of Kubja who comes. Kubja also represents earth element only. Because she is an incarnation of Satyabhama, who is earth personified. So Kubja is bent, indicating that the earth is bent with a heavy load of sin. So when sinful people walk on the earth feels burdened. And when Krishna walks on the earth feels relief of his burden because the purpose of Krishna's walk, Krishna doesn't walk whimsically. Every step that Krishna takes is one step further in decreasing the burden of the earth. So if you study the entire pastime of Krishna, whatever Krishna does, anywhere Krishna goes, he's taking one step in decreasing the burden of the earth. We will see further as we go through the pastimes of Krishna in Dwarka and Mathura and all these places, how Krishna is actually decreasing in a mass way. Till now in Vrindavan, he is only doing it in a class way. Selective asuras coming and him killing. But when he goes out of Vrindavan, then there is mass destruction of sin. So, the next element on the lotus feet of the Lord is the fish element. What does the fish indicate? Fish indicates that fish can't survive without water. Fish cannot live without water. Indicating that from a devotee's perspective, the devotee should feel like a fish. Without access, without being at the lotus feet of the Lord, the mind is restless. So our mind is like a fish. If the fish is outside the water, how much it flaps, how much it struggles, how much it is, you know, desperate. That kind of desperation, one should feel the moment our mind falls out of the water of Krishna consciousness. As soon as the mind falls out of the water of Krishna consciousness, it should start flapping. If you become comfortable outside the water of Krishna consciousness, something is wrong. Then we are dead. So, the fish at the lotus feet of the Lord indicates that the mind becomes steady when it is stuck at the lotus feet of the Lord. Then, there is a conch shell which indicates heralding of auspiciousness. As soon as the conch is blown, inauspiciousness gets destroyed and auspiciousness begins. Aarti begins after a conch shell is blown. And aarti ends with a conch shell indicating that from anyone who has seen the aarti being performed, auspiciousness has started in his life. So conch shell indicates beginning of auspiciousness. Then there is a 8-pointed star. There is a star which has 8 points, 8 directions. So this star indicates that all the 8 directions of this world are located at the lotus feet of the Lord. So if anybody wants to go in any direction, you come here. This is the answer to all your wanderings. Then there is a symbol of swastik, which again is indicating auspiciousness. Then there is a very interesting symbol of an umbrella. What does an umbrella indicate? Umbrella indicates protection from the downpours of misery. This world is raining misery into our lives. When we take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, it's like an umbrella shielding our heads. Then there is a wheel which indicates deliverance from the cycle of birth, death, old age and disease. Then there is a barley corn which indicates prosperity. Corn, you know, indicates beginning of new, the harvest season, you know, it indicates beginning of prosperity. And then finally there is a elephant goad. There is a, you know, the Mohots carry this elephant goad. So what does that indicate? It indicates that the Lord has a goad in His hand through which He is directing our intelligence. Mind likes to go here and there. You know, I don't know if you have observed this in villages or in small towns where there are elephants. Sometimes they take elephants on processions. And when they take an elephant on a procession, some of these Mohots, the way they handle the elephant is that they give an elephant a small stick in its trunk. So the elephant is holding his stick. You know why they give the elephant a stick in its trunk? Because the tendency of the elephant is that to eat anything and everything. So we see a banana over here on the side, it puts its trunk and starts eating, you know. So the Mohot, what he does is that he gives the elephant a stick to hold. So because the elephant has love for the Mohot and he has to obey the command of the Mohot, he holds a stick. Because the trunk is already occupied, he can't try to catch something else. He can only catch that. Similarly, the spiritual master and the Lord, they give us a stick to hold on to. The Hare Krishna Mahamantra, which is like a stick. The mind tries to go here and there, tries to go everywhere, but the moment you're given the stick, ye pakdo. Because there is some amount of love for the spiritual master, we say, okay, theek hai. We hold the stick, and as soon as you hold the stick, your mind is not going here and there. You know, stays focused. So the elephant goad indicates that there is the mad mind needs engagement. And the Lord gives engagement by giving us His holy name and His pastimes. Then there is a flag. Flag indicates victory in a devotee's life. Then there is a thunderbolt which indicates that this element is going to shatter the pride of a person's heart. The false pride that is there in the heart. Then there is jambu fruit. There is a, you know, jambu which indicates sweetness. And then there is an upward line. This is called Urdhvaretas. This upward line indicates elevation in a devotee's life. And finally, there is a lotus flower, which indicates many things. Because everything of the Lord is connected with lotus only. So lotus indicates that here is a person who is going to attract the sun sign. Sunshine indicates knowledge, sunshine indicates positivity. So, like that, the different symbols of the Lord's lotus feet can be analyzed. When we see the gopis over here hankering to meet Krishna, how many times do they actually meet Krishna? And how many times are they actually separated from Krishna? Most of their lives are separated from Krishna. And even in the 10 years that Krishna was there with them in Vrindavan, there was mostly separation. Because there was a lot of maryada. There was a lot of etiquettes to be followed. So because of the etiquettes, the gopis were always in separation from Krishna. So meeting with Krishna is not really going to happen all the time. Parikshit Maharaj met Krishna 2 times. One time he met Krishna in the womb of his mother when he was going to die. And another time he met Krishna was when he was actually going to die, second time when Takshak was going to bite him. Now you might see that Parikshit's life, in what circumstances did he meet Krishna? In the most toughest circumstances of his life. But those toughest circumstances of his life, did they water down the meeting, the possibility of meeting Krishna? So helplessness allows access to Krishna more. If you see in the pastime of Durvas Muni and Ambarish Maharaj, Durvas Muni also met Krishna, but he met Krishna in the form of Sudarshan Chakra. And Ambarish Maharaj also met Krishna, Amrish met Krishna in the form of Krishna's grace. So now, if you study from this perspective, is meeting Krishna actually exciting? Meeting Krishna is exciting if the excitement is more from the Lord's point of view. If the Lord is excited to meet us, then that meeting is really exciting. But if the Lord is not interested in meeting us, then the form in which he comes, it's a very deadly form. For Durvasa Muni, the Lord came, the meeting happened. But the meeting of Durvasa Muni with the Lord's energy, it was not a very exciting meeting. It was a very disastrous meeting. It was a very scary meeting. So, preceding the meeting of the Lord is the preparation for the meeting. So, what are we doing to prepare for that meeting indicates or actually predicts how the meeting is going to be. If the preparation is very intense, then the meeting will be very sweet. If the preparation is very, very weak, then the meeting will be very scary because you're not prepared. Just imagine you're going for a board meeting and the person who's going for a board meeting is just not prepared. What to present in the meeting, what to speak in the meeting. Then the meeting will be like a disaster because he'll ruin his career. So similarly, when we prepare to meet Krishna, the meeting will be exciting or not depending on how our preparation is. So here, in this particular pastime, the gopis were hankering to meet Krishna, but they were hardly meeting Krishna. But those few moments that they have met Krishna, that moments have been so exciting, that those moments have left them hankering for good. But more than anything else, more than the gopis, the excitement of Krishna is much higher than the gopis' excitement to meet Krishna. So, basically, meeting without the desire to serve is useless. Hiranyakashipu also met Krishna, met Narasingadev. But that meeting was not with the desire to serve. Hiranyakashipu wanted to kill Narasingadev, and therefore the meeting was arranged. And when the meeting happened, what happened? Hiranyakashipu lost his life. So similarly, if you do not have the desire to serve, then the meeting is useless. So here, the gopis, their whole discussion about the personality of Krishna is from the perspective of how intensely they desire to serve Krishna, how intensely they are hankering to serve Krishna. So if our desire to serve Krishna is so intense, then the meeting makes sense. Like, there is a folk tale of the story of the Ramayana where during the fight of Ram Ravan, there is a section where the monkeys become very proud that, you know, we have such powers to defeat demons. So Ram wants to just give them a taste of what really is happening. So what he does is that hundreds of demons are coming, running towards the monkeys. Ram wants to just show them that actually the monkeys are doing nothing. So suddenly in front of them, they saw that all the demons looked like Ram only. So when the demons saw each other, they started killing each other. And like that, an entire section of the army was destroyed. The monkeys did nothing. They themselves destroyed each other. But if you see the story from another angle, what do you see? That each of these demons had a chance to associate with Ram. But rather than taking advantage of their association, they tried to kill Ram. So meeting when there is no love, that meeting can be disastrous. Because that meeting will lead to offense. So therefore, there is extreme amount of preparation that is needed. In the Mahabharata, if you see, two personalities are known as Krishna only. Draupadi is named as Krishna and Arjun also is called as Krishna. Now why is Draupadi and why is Arjun called Krishna? The reason they are called Krishna, many reasons. One of the reasons they are called Krishna is because both of them are so much absorbed in Krishna that they practically are like Krishna in quality. So absorption in the Lord invokes qualities which are godly. So the more one absorbs oneself in the Lord, that much the ability to connect is very strong. Unfortunately, our absorption is not so high. In villages, when you pump water. You know, use this hand pump to pump water. Sometimes, when the hand pump has not been used for a long time, when you pump it, what comes out? Only sound comes out. Only you hear sounds, different sounds, you know. What does it mean? Does it mean that the water is not there? It only means that the water has not been used for a long time. So generally what is done in the villages is that they put a little amount of water on top of the pump. There is a small hole. On that they put water and then they start pumping. And immediately water comes out. The reason is because that space has been occupied by air. The capillary action doesn't get completed. Therefore the water doesn't come out. The moment you put little water on top, there is a completion of the capillary action and the water comes out immediately. So in our lives also, all of us have an air gap. Krishna Bhakti is there in everybody's heart. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhaka Bhana Shravanadi Suddhi Chitta Kadai Hodai. Krishna Prema is there in everybody's heart. There is a big air gap. The Prema will not come out unless something is put from top in. Therefore, through the medium of hearing, we insert water. And then the gap gets completed. And then immediately, you know, the whole concept of devotion starts flowing out. But who is the person who puts that water from top? That person is a devotee. Only when we decide to allow a devotee to pour water through our ears, only then the capillary action gets completed. Unfortunately, in today's world, most people, they are opposed to putting anything good into the ears. They say, hey, what is this? This fellow is putting something crazy in my ears. All different things will come out. So people know that when you know, there's this story of one man who went to a Bhagavad Katha and he didn't want to be transformed. Because he knew, if I sit in a Bhagavad Katha, my heart will get transformed and I'll become a devotee. So he went to the bell in both his ears. So as soon as the Katha would start, he would start ringing the bell in his ears, you know, so that he can't hear anything. So in today's world, most people are like that. Rather than allowing Krishna Katha to enter and purify and the connection to happen, water to start coming out, we are blocking it. We are allowing more air to enter in. So, Krishna, Draupadi and Arjun, they were absorbed in Krishna all the time. Therefore, they developed divine qualities. In our lives, most people limit their growth themselves only. Like then, there is a story of this man who wanted to grow pumpkins. And one day, he planted a pumpkin creeper. And then, when the pumpkin started growing a little bit, he inserted that pumpkin in a bottle. And the pumpkin grew to the shape of the bottle. It didn't grow bigger than that. So he started crying, you know, what is this? The shape of the pumpkin, such a small pumpkin has come out. So how much, what shape you give to the pumpkin, or how much you limit the pumpkin's growth, that much it will grow. So all of us, we tend to have a limitation of on our growth also. That limitation comes from a strong hankering within our heart to enjoy the material world also. So we have a desire to enjoy the material world, same time a little desire to practice, grow our devotional creeper. But the desire to enjoy this world becomes like a limiting cover. How much your fruit can grow? If you want your fruit to grow to an unlimited extent, then you break that covering. The entire life of Arjuna and Draupadi, if you see, their life indicates that they have never kept a cover. They have never kept a cover in the sense, they always allowed Krishna to direct their lives. And whatever they went through in their lives, they never blamed the Lord. In fact, they were just happy with whatever happened. So, that kind of absorption leads to growth. When we limit our absorptions by our mind, then that absorption becomes very, very stagnant. In fact, mind is like a limiting agent. How much you give empowerment to the mind, that much the mind will control your life. I'll end this with a small story. There was a man who was very proud of his dog. He thought that he had taught his dog all the best tricks. And he thought that he had full control over the dog. So one day, he was trying to show off to the world how much the dog is trained, you know. So it was like a rainy season. So he went out and he gave his umbrella to the dog to hold. The dog was holding the umbrella in his mouth. The dog was walking ahead of him.
So he started to drizzle. So he called the dog, come here, get the umbrella. The dog started walking further, faster. So he said, you come over here, it's starting to rain. It started raining heavily. And the dog ran away. So, our mind is like that dog. If you hand over the umbrella of spiritual consciousness to the mind, you think that you have the mind under control, but the moment you need it the most, the mind will let you down. It will run away. So, the whole process of spiritual realization is, it's like a journey. Many people feel that chanting is very repetitive. What is the same thing again and again and again? You know, many people feel that when we chant, we are getting nowhere. But when we walk, is walking also not repetitive? Take the same steps. One left foot front, then right foot front, the left foot front. It's repetitive. But even though it is repetitive, if you do the same thing again and again and again, you reach a destination. Same thing with chanting. It seems to be repetitive, but just remember that repetition is taking you ahead in your spiritual journey. So here in this entire pastime, if you just summarize it, what are the gopis trying to do? The gopis are trying to absorb themselves, absorb their mind in Krishna. They are trying to repeat as many pastimes of Krishna as possible again and again and again and again. What is the reason they are doing it? The reason they are doing it is because such repetition takes them ahead in their connection with Krishna. Such repetition increases the absorption in Krishna. And such repetition purifies the mind that is running away, trying to run away ahead. So when we study the gopis of Vrindavan, we may not be able to study from the esoteric perspective. Here there is also mentioned that the gopis of Vrindavan were discussing this and they were thinking from a conjugal point of view. But from our point of view, if you see, whether we understand higher rasas or no, we understand one rasa, the rasa of absorption, the rasa of remembrance of Krishna constantly. If you want to take anything from the gopis, this is what we can take. What is common between the gopis and us? The chance to remember Krishna. If the chance to remember Krishna is used, one can become like the gopis. And if the chance for remembering Krishna is not used, then one can become like Hiranyakashipu. Meeting Krishna, but we will think that we are enemies of Krishna. We fight with Krishna. Hare Krishna. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.